Audi.
Hello and welcome to the Big Travel Podcast. I'm Lisa Francesca Nand. My guest today has a show on talk radio with the lovely Catherine Boyle, aka Flipping Kath. They go on tour, they podcast, he has a TV show recorded from his bedroom, and he's a proper cult figure in radio. Travel-wise, he's eaten camel brains and a pig's vagina in I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here in the Australian Jungle, been caught in gunfire in Pakistan, and wandered the souks of Marrakesh accompanied by the world's biggest roll of sellotape. I'm delighted to have Ian Lee on the Big Travel Podcast.
Hey, nice to meet you at
really
last.
Really nice to meet you. Yeah, it's been a long time since we've been talking.
We've been long time tweeters.
Yes.
And now we are physical greeters.
I think it was actually even pre-Twitter. I think I used to email you back in the day.
Oh, do you know, that would make sense. Because, yeah, when I was on Virgin was when Twitter started. Because I remember my producer, Davis, came in one day and said, I've got this new thing. I found this thing called Twitter and I thought we could use it on the show. And I went, no, because I didn't really get on with him. And so every time I suggested an idea, he would go, no. And every time he suggested an idea, I'd go, no. And he showed me this Twitter and it was basic and it was rubbish. I went, no, not interested. No, we're not doing it. We're not. It's Twitter.
But you have a love-hate relationship with it, don't you?
It's hate. I hate it. It's awful. I tell you why it's awful. But people are horrible on there, but then there are some nice people. Oh, it's like taking drugs. I'm a drug addict. I used to take a lot of cocaine, and I don't now, thank God. But it's just, you'd always just go, let's just have one more line. I'm just going to have one. And even though you've been puking up, and you've got the sweats, and let me just do one more line, and then I'm going to go to bed. And it's like that with Twitter. It's like, let me just do one more tweet. And then I always end up having to clarify a tweet because someone's been offended by my last tweet where it wasn't quite as specific as I thought it was, or something that I thought was obviously a joke was taken literally. And I go, well, no, actually, no, I'm not racist. But right, let me explain. The last 2 weeks, I've been called out for being a racist, an anti-Semite, and being transphobic. I'm none of those things at all. Yeah. But I've been called out for all of them. And I've had to go and explain. No,
it just dig a hole, don't you?
It just gets worse and worse.
But you speak really openly about your mental health.
Yes.
And actually, that's a really nice segue into what I wanted to ask you further down the line, actually, when I wrote some questions and then forgot them.
Oh, you forgot them?
I forgot
when them. You came in and said, oh, I've got no notes, I thought, oh, she's good. You forgot them.
No, but often I write them and then never refer to them either, so they're just a crutch. One of the things I wanted to ask you about your mental health was I saw online somewhere, probably on Twitter, somewhere I've been stalking you, that you read Matt Haig's Reasons to Stay Alive.
Oh, yeah, he's brilliant, isn't he?
And he talks a lot about travel in that and how travel has really helped him with his mental health, which I think is very interesting, because if you're anxious in the first place, it's quite, I mean, I used to have a little bit of it, and I used to really struggle with getting on a plane. I get on it anyway, but he talks about how travel has sort of helped him with his mental health. Now, I know you've been, again, some online stalking to quite a few places.
Yes.
Do you find it helps you, hinders you? What does it do for you?
That's a really good question. If I'm going travelling on my own, which I've only done a few times, I struggle. Because I will sit in my hotel room overwhelmed, going, right, well, I'm in New York. I'm just going to watch the TV for a few hours. And I will watch the TV for a few hours. And I think, Jesus, man, you're in New York. Go out and do something. You know, ask people. Last time I was there on my own, ask people. I'm in New York. I wasn't quite expecting it to go this way. I went to New York to see the Monkees in concert, and then they cancelled because one of them had a heart attack. How selfish. And so I suddenly had 4 days without anything to do, and the plans were gone. And I went on Twitter, one of the good things of Twitter, and said, I'm in New York. I don't want to do all the touristy stuff. What suggestions have you got? And people came up with some really cool stuff. And I went out, I picked the best ones, and I went and did it. Does it help my mental health? Ultimately, yes. Ultimately, yes, is the short answer. Because you're out, you're somewhere else, the weather is different, people are different, food is different, the environment is different. But the thing I've learned is you can't go abroad to run away, because wherever you go, that's where you are. It's always there. Your head is always there. And you might have a couple of days of, hey, yeah, I'm having a great time. And then you go, oh, yeah, I'm still nuts. And the thing that was depressing me is within me, so that has come with me as well.
And you can't escape yourself anymore, but you could never escape yourself, but you can't escape your world anymore, which is in a good way, because you can be somewhere solo travelling, and actually you've still got your phone, you've still got your
zillions of followers in your case. You've still got the people you communicate with if you want it.
Yeah.
Which is a help and a hindrance.
It is it, right. In that instance in New York, it was a help because I just couldn't find anything to do in New York. That's not true. But I couldn't find anything that excited me, and I had these days free. And I went on Twitter, and straight away someone said, right, well, there's a Frank Sinatra tribute concert 5 blocks away from you. Right, I'm having that. The people just, I can't even remember what they recommended. There was another concert, there were a couple of shows, and it was like, oh, okay, fine. And I worked through them, and I went and did all these amazing, amazing things. And I think when I'm abroad, I will go and do things that I would not, you know, it's still, you know, being in New York, it's very similar to London, but I will go and take a chance on seeing a film that I've never heard of before, or go and see a band that I haven't heard of before. And in London, I won't do that. But the converse is, when I went, I get embarrassed mentioning this, but someone was talking to me about it today, so it's in my head. I did I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, right? And one of the greatest things about it was the second I landed in Australia, I was in the jungle for 3 weeks, and I was in Australia before that in lockdown for maybe 10 days, right? The second I landed down, they allowed me to make one phone call, then they took my phone and they took my computer off me. They checked me into a hotel that I wasn't allowed to leave. They cancelled the internet in the room, and they cancelled, I couldn't phone out of the room. And the first 2 days, I'm going nuts, going, I'm missing my kids and thinking what's happening and blah, blah, blah. And day three, man, I was zen. I was reading books. I was watching films all the way through without even thinking about it. And I was thinking, well, if anything happens to my kids, I'll find out. That someone will tell me, you know, so I have to assume they're all right. So it was nice being thousands of miles away from anywhere and disconnected.
Why do they do that? So they do that for several days in your room before you go in. Is it some sort of anti-decompression chamber?
They did it for me because I was going in late, and so they didn't want me to know who else had gone in, right? So they kept. So I landed there on a Monday, and I was going in the Thursday of the next week, right? And they do it so you can't read anything about what's happening. You can't phone up your family, and they go, oh, by the way, such and such is in. So you're isolated. And then the day before I went in, the producers came into my hotel room and said, right, we're going to tell you who's in there. I mean, what? We're going to tell you who's in there because the person who's going in with you left England late and they saw the first episode. So they know who's in there already. I said, right, sorry, you've had me without a phone or a computer for 10 days and not been able to speak to my kids to stop me from knowing this information, and you're telling me now. They went, yeah. So it was a waste of time.
10 days.
10 days.
10 days. And were you let out of your room?
For the first week, I was not allowed off the hotel grounds. I had to stay in the grounds. Then after the first week, everybody went into the jungle, and so it was safe for me to go to the city. I don't remember what city it was. And then I was kind of allowed out, but I had a chaperone who would.
Because people could speak to you and come and speak to you.
People would speak to me, so I had a chaperone who was with me and was not allowed. We had separate rooms, but if I was leaving the hotel, I had to get her to come with me and escort me.
That is so weird. How was that for your mental health?
It was nuts. It was nuts, actually. I didn't get on with the first chaperone. I think she found me boring because I would just sit there and read and listen to my iPod. I thought it was a great chance to catch up on books and some podcasts. It was, for my mental health, that was all right. I mean, going in the jungle for my mental health was a nightmare. That was insane. It was a stupid thing to do, you know. But I faked the psych test. You know, if you've ever seen a psychiatrist or a doctor, you know what to say to a doctor to get the pills you want or to get them to sign something off. So my psych test, and this is kind of relevant with, you know, everything that's happening with Love Island, and there's been a lot of Jeremy Kyle, there's been a lot of focus put on we'll talk about travel in a minute, but there's a lot of focus put on.
Is this travel?
Oh, is it? Okay, good.
Australia.
It is Australia. So, you know, too many people have taken their own lives after being on Kyle or Love Island and stuff like that. And I can totally get it. I totally get why. My psych interviews, I think I did it on the phone. Don't think I even met her. I've had my own psychiatrist who I went in and he said, do you think you're good? You're up for it? I said, yeah. I said, I think I am. He went, okay, I kind of think you are. And but the when I spoke to their psych, the show psych, I just said what I knew she wanted to say. Are you feeling suicidal? Have you felt suicidal recently? No. Of course I had. No. Okay, do you fantasise about taking drugs? No.
All the time?
Of course I do, all the time. I mean, I was 13 years clean at that point, but no, of course not. I mean, so I said what I needed to say, because I needed the job. I needed the job.
Was that why you did it? You wanted the money?
I did it because I was getting divorced. That's it. They'd asked me four times before. I'd always said no. I thought, but it's handy to have that one in my back pocket in case. But no, I'm not interested. And then I got divorced, and I needed a big check so I could get a deposit for a house. There were three things. There was the money, there was the fact that my kids, who were 6 and 8 at the time, had never really seen me on TV, and I thought, oh, this would be good for them to know kind of what I used to do, and they'll love seeing me covered in spiders and stuff like that. And I did it to plug the radio show, you know, because no one was listening to talk radio at the time. Here was a chance to go in front of 12 million people and say, hey, some of you might remember me, some of you might not, but I do a radio show and I think you might like it. Come and check it out.
And it so really that's worked. How I did it. It really
works. Oh, it works. Yeah, yeah.
The front page of all the newspapers.
Front page of the papers, man.
Yeah. Okay. Is that weird?
Yeah, it was... Well, it was nuts because you don't know anything. You don't know anything. And I nearly walked out twice. I nearly walked out after 3 days, because after the initial adrenaline rush of going in, there was a huge crash after I did a challenge, a swimming challenge. I couldn't do it because I can't swim very well. They say to you, can you swim? And I went, yeah. Because I can swim, but I can't swim underwater. And when I saw it as one that you had to go 3 metres underwater, I was like, oh, jeez, I can't. I just knew I couldn't do it, but I had to go. But so I came crashing down after that, and I said, I'm going to leave. And they sort of talked me out after that. I think I met the psych then. And she sort of told me off, said, if you leave now, you're going to be letting down your family. Is that kind of vibe? I was like, well, this is
not
a bit...
sure if that's good for you or the best thing to be doing. But it was the best thing for the show, for them.
Yeah, I thought, this is a little bit...
You really let yourself down here.
Yeah, it was that. This is a chance of a lifetime, and if you walk out and it...
You'll be nothing.
Okay.
If you leave me now, you'll
didn't
be
quite
nothing.
Say that, but it was not far off. And then the second time was later on. I was getting intimidated by a couple of people in there because they were arseholes. And I'd eaten some strawberries. And
it's the small things like that really count when you're starving and you haven't had, you know, proper food because you'd eaten the strawberries.
Stole some strawberries because it was funny. And I was going to leave. And there was one of the lovely producers, a woman called Laura. She was one of the voices you would hear in the whatever it is, the I used to call it the diary room, but I get told off for that. And she, they don't tell you anything, but she would say, but imagine, why do you want to leave? Because I hate it and everyone hates me and everyone in here hates me and everyone out there hates me. But imagine if everyone outside doesn't hate you. Imagine that everyone out there has got a lot of affection for you, and maybe large numbers of people are rooting for you to do well. Basically telling me what was going on, but of course not saying you've kind of won the hearts of the nation by crying and stealing some strawberries, you know, people are really on your side. Not saying that. It was some experience, man. Would you ever do it?
I don't think anyone's ever going to ask me, but I don't think I could turn it down. What would freak me out, and I've been to, like, it's all right in the daytime.
Yeah.
But I've been to resorts where you stay in, like, on a beautiful Fijian island, and you stay in, like, a hut, you know, it looks amazing. You arrive in the daytime, there's coconuts, you know, lazily fanning themselves overhead, maybe coconut palms rather than the coconuts, and it looks amazing. That's so weird. I've got these
coconuts fanning themselves. Wow.
You need to go to these resorts.
Yes, ma'am.
And then at night time, you know, it's when it starts to come alive, and there's bugs and there's noises and there's darkness and there's scary things. And I'm bad enough when I go to, like, the countryside in England at night time, let alone in the middle of the jungle.
The worst thing was getting up and going for a wee in the middle of the night. I'd rather
wet myself.
Yeah.
It's not good to do in front of millions of people.
It's not. I came close to it. But it was not. That was not pleasant. But. It's a unique experience, man.
I'd probably go in for the weight loss. I like the idea of the sort of the starvation.
I lost a stone and a half.
Yeah.
Stone and a half. And then you put it on, as soon as you come out, you're not that... I mean, I ate quite well in there. But on the last...
Because it was the strawberries, wasn't it?
The strawberries. Because I got to the last three, you get to choose, like, your dream meal. So I had a roast dinner and like, cheese board and milkshakes and all of this stuff. But to earn that roast dinner, I'd had to do the eating challenge, where I ate a pig's vagina. The worst one was camel brains. That was... Even when I think about it now, I can feel it in the back of my throat.
Why was the camel brains worse?
Because it was quite big. Vagina. Pig's vagina was tiny, and it was chewy and salty, but that was it. Nom, 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 nom. It's gone. The camel brain was actually quite big, about the size of a fist, a little bit smaller than the size of my fist, and it was gelatinous. It was kind of like a sort of meaty jelly. You chew it, and it just wouldn't break down in your mouth, and you chew and think, I'm chewing this, and it's still the same amount. And you're not allowed to drink water while you do it. You can only drink once your mouth is empty. So there was that. There was scorpions I had to eat, and they tasted like just like... Imagine a big bag of fingernails. You've got to eat those. But the eating was easy. Well, I walked out and saw it was eating. She didn't know what trial you were going to get. was like, all right, I can do this. This I can do. It's not high up. It's not underwater. Eating, I can do this and I can make this funny. But it meant that I felt sick for the rest of the day. Just like, I wanted to vomit and I couldn't make myself vomit. And they said, if you want to go and puke, do it. And I had my fingers down my throat and I couldn't bring it up.
Do you think you psychologically felt sick or actually felt sick?
Oh, no, because I'd eaten a pig's fanny and a camel's brain. Of course I felt sick. Yeah, it wasn't psychological.
Surely it's just like eating a cow's liver or something like that.
There was a milkshake. The milkshake was like worms and cockroaches, I think, and stuff. And that was easy because you just think, oh, it's a smoothie. You do it in one. You open your throat and do it in one. It's a smoothie. You don't even taste it. It just goes down. But it was very filling, and it did. I felt sick and uncomfortable, so I didn't enjoy them. When the meal came, it's a roast dinner, roast potatoes and lamb, and
After you'd done the trial, so you're already.
So I had the trial in the morning, a trial at lunchtime, and then the meal in the evening.
Oh, that's not very good.
No.
Surely the next day would have been better.
I couldn't do it.
That would bother me, actually, from a moral point of view. I don't like the idea of the live bugs being eaten.
I didn't eat any live bugs. If you're a vegetarian, which I was when they first interviewed me for it, and I'm not now, but they won't give you bugs. They'll give you like horrible vegetables, like a vomit fruit, I think it's called, and stuff.
Oh, it's they have it in Singapore. It's the durian fruit.
Right, okay.
I've sampled a little bit.
Tasty?
It doesn't taste as bad as it smells.
It's the smell, is the thing.
Yeah.
Right.
But the interesting thing about that is that people in Singapore, when you say, like, why do you eat this vomit fruit? And they go, well, why do you eat, like, mouldy cheese?
Yeah, you
with,
go.
Like, blue bits in it. It's so mouldy, it's gone blue. Yeah. It's like cow's breast milk. You're like, okay, when you put it like that.
I blew my kid's mind the other day by going, you know, cheese is just mould. What? It's just mould. What do you mean?
From the milk of the breasts of cows.
Yeah, it's mould. Ah, oh, it's disgusting. Do you know what? I have no argument for the ethical thing. I agree with you. Using animals and insects and stuff for entertainment is thing. I can say that all of the animals and creatures I saw were treated. You know, there are handlers waiting offset, particularly with the big spiders. There were always handlers just out of shot, ready to take them. But yeah, there were. Do you know what? Actually, I don't care about the ants. The ants can excuse my language, fuck off. I hope they all died. The fire ants, because they're just like biting you, and then whenever they said, right, you're going to go down to the trial area and you're going to need to wear shorts, you go, oh man, it's ants. It's going to be ants. Because the ants would then just come up and just bite your balls.
Like that film. Do you remember there was a film with ants years ago, and there's people in like a high-rise building and they end up like just breathing out of loo rolls?
Is that not a creep show?
I don't know. It was a film like in the 70s or 80s.
Well, there's Creepshow, which is like an anthology. Is that the same film that's also got Ted Danson, who gets drowned and comes back as a zombie?
I don't remember Ted Danson as a zombie. It might well be. I just remember the ant. I was very young, and the ants made an impression on me.
I suspect there's going to be a lot of films with ants in from the 70s.
Yeah, I don't know.
There are a lot of films with killer bees in.
Killer bees, yeah.
I can remember two, actually. There's one where a guy had to drive into a football stadium and had to turn the air conditioning to cold to kill the ants. And there was another one with Michael Caine. One was called Swarm, if you want to check that out.
I think I saw Swarm.
Swarm.
Was that bees?
Bees, I think.
Oh, I think, are they the people that at the end sitting in an apartment block breathing out of tunnelling things. So you're in Australia, and that's only like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
I saw recently online that you went to Marrakesh on your own.
Oh, it was
again.
Rubbish.
But you're brave enough to go on your own, which is great, but why was it rubbish?
I tell you
why
I went to Marrakesh. This was like a real... This was when... I'd moved out of... This is all to do with the marriage. I'd moved out of the marital home when I was low. I was really low. And I was living in a tiny little bedsit. Just while everything was getting sorted out, and I was just felt lousy. I thought, I'm going to do something. And it was literally, I'm going to go to Marrakesh. And there was no, you know, there's no thinking beyond the Crosby, Stills and Nash song. And so I booked a trip to Marrakesh, and I hated almost every single second of it.
Why?
Because it wasn't like they told me in the song. There were no striped jalebas I could wear at home. It was nothing like they said in the song, right? And when I
got... It
was
written quite a while ago.
Yeah. And when I got there, and I booked a hotel, and I got there, and we got met at the airport by these slightly dodgy people, and we got taken to Marrakesh. And we got this, like, 1 o'clock in the morning, and me and this girl got taken to the hotel, and she got found a room, and I could see these blokes talking, And they'd obviously got rid of my room because I think they thought I was coming earlier in the day and I hadn't shown up. So they said, oh, we're going to take you to another hotel. Like, okay, all right. And they took me to a hotel and it was horrible. And I was just sat in this room and it was like a cell. And I stayed there for two nights, sucking it up. And
did you leave the room?
I left the room, but it was horrible. And I would, because I'm like an idiot, I would go, oh, thanks, this is great, thanks. But fuming. And after the second night, I just packed my stuff up. This is how silly I am, right? I should have said, this isn't the hotel I booked. I want my money back. I'm going. Right. Instead, what I did was I packed up my stuff. And to get out of the hotel, you had to walk past the man that ran it, who I'd said, this is great, thanks. So I packed my stuff up, and I was there for 10 minutes going, right, I'm just going to walk out. I'm just going to walk. I'm just going to take my stuff, and I'm taking my stuff. And I walked out, and I had to psych myself up. And I walked out, and the guy said, you going? I said, yeah. He said, why are you going? I said, because this hotel is not the hotel I booked, and I'm really disappointed.
Did you cry?
I didn't cry, but I got... And he said, are you coming back later? I said, I'm never coming back to this place. It's horrible. And so then I went and booked...
Did you actually say that then?
Yeah, I did. I said it.
Well,
I said that.
Did it feel good?
I felt really silly. As I walked away, I thought, why didn't I just tell him? Why didn't I just say, this isn't the hotel I booked? You stitched me up. And it's shit. I didn't. So then I went and sat in a coffee shop, and I booked another hotel. And then I just sat there in Marrakesh. All I did was drink coffee. I did a hot air balloon. That was amazing. That was a hot air balloon at dawn. That was incredible, and that was well worth it. But all I did was just drink coffee and go from one coffee shop to the next. Bought a giant roll of sellotape, actually, which I've never seen. Honestly, it's a huge roll of sellotape. Massive. Saw it in
for
a market.
Any reason did you need it?
No, I just walked past it. That sellotape is huge. I've never seen anything like it.
You weren't going to go back to your room and sort of take yourself
I wasn't going to do that. But I've never seen anything like it. I'll send you a picture of the sellotape. Okay. It's incredible. And I got the usual... I tried to find a church or a mosque or something, and I couldn't find it. And then, you know, some guy said, oh, no, that's closed, but I know where there's a better mosque.
Oh, yeah, they always do.
Right, okay. And I'm so stupid. I went, okay, yeah, sure, sure. It's this way. Come down here. Before we go there, come and have a look in this pharmacy. This pharmacy is great. Have a look. And he introduced me to the guy. This is the guy that runs it. Hey, this is my friend. This is Mr. Ian. This is my... And I was thinking, oh, no. It's India on my honeymoon all over again.
It's India, yeah. Down alleys and so, one shop.
Yes.
In Bangkok. One shop, just one shop.
Just one shop. And so I politely looked around, and then I was so pissed off. I went, do you know what? I'm out of here. Bye. And I walked out, and the guy was still there. Oh, you're leaving. Come, I'll take you to... I said, mate, fuck off. I turned to my dad. I went, mate, fuck off. And it was... I didn't really enjoy it. My head wasn't in the right space. It was where I found out I was doing the jungle. I got the phone call while I was there saying, you're in. So that was great. But I kept... I got a feeling I stayed in three hotels because I don't think the second one was very good either. I'd buy cheap, buy twice, you see. And so I would go on Expedia and get like a cheap hotel and rock up and go, this isn't very nice.
Wonder why.
Well, exactly.
You can afford better.
I can afford better.
Well, so
the third one was all right. But I booked a flight. I couldn't change my flight, so I booked a flight to come home a day earlier. And then the next day I went, I'm not digging this. I booked a flight to go home that day. So I paid for two extra flights and three hotels.
But you got the best sellotape in the world. And have you cracked it open? Have you used it? No, you're going to
keep
it.
I will not use that sellotape. That is going to be passed on to my kids.
Do you know, weirdly, when I was in Florence, I bought a hole punch. I said there was nothing special about this hole punch. It wasn't like an oversized one. Yeah. It's not like, you know, those people that go around taking like big pictures of massive plastic prawns and plastic seafood that is on buildings.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
It was just a normal hole punch, but I thought, I have a hole punch, and I bought this hole punch in Florence, and I took it around like the whole city for 3 days with me, and then I started to take photos of it in prominent places. Beautiful. So up at the beautiful palace at the top of the hill where the gardens, in fact, this is my screensaver.
Yeah.
I've got a lovely sunset picture of this hole punch with the view of Florence behind
it. Oh, that's fantastic.
It is.
Stationary abroad. I went to Marrakesh because I wanted to do some writing. I wanted to write. I wanted to sort my head out a bit, and it didn't work. And that point, being on my own was a hindrance. If I'd had someone there to just kind of talk me off the ledge a little bit and say, right, well, this today, look, why don't we go and do this? Yeah, sure, fine. Going around and seeing kind of old buildings on my own, at that point in my life was not the best.
I've spoken about this with quite a lot of adventurers that I have on the podcast. I mean, I have people that like climb Everest. Mind you, everyone climbs Everest these days.
You see the picture of the queue?
The queue, yeah.
That's insane. I thought it was a joke when I read the headline. And there's a picture.
It's really, it's very weird. Instagram has done that to a lot of places.
Is Everest easier to climb than it was 100 years ago? Or are we better at climbing? Have we evolved as climbers?
Well, I am never going to climb Everest because I'm a serial holidayer. I'm not an adventurer.
Right.
But in my opinion, I think that our technology has got better. So that in terms
GPS
of...
GPS and stuff.
Yeah, but no, but also what you're wearing and the climbing equipment and that sort of thing. And it's got more popular, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It seems that you don't... obviously, I don't want to belittle it, because I'm sure it's quite difficult, and I'm certainly never...
Everest.
Have no...
They've got ladders in some bits of it.
Have they?
Yeah.
Have they got lifts?
They haven't got lifts yet.
You should get some lifts. When they've got lifts...
Get a Stanner.
I will go. I'm a Stanner Stellar.
I would pay top dollar for a Stanner ride up Everest.
Some of the adventurers I speak to... Or actually, even authors. I had a guy called William Sutcliffe. I don't know if you remember, in the 90s, there was a book called Are You Experienced?
Oh, yeah.
And it was about, like, the wankers that go travelling.
Yes.
When they're 18 or something. And it was it was the funniest book. And I had him on a few weeks ago. And I remembered this book from 20 years ago. It was so good. And one of the scenes in it is him having, like, he's in real hardship. You know, he's on a beach. Well, it was only semi-autobiographical. It wasn't really him. His character is on a beach. He's lost his girlfriend. He's shat his pants in a hostel. Those sort of things happen. And we were discussing, like, how hardship when you travel actually sometimes, you know, as long as nobody's died, sometimes makes it that little bit more memorable. But maybe not when you're just on a short weekend America.
I don't want hardship. I've done hardship. I don't want it. I don't like camping. I've only hosteled once. It would have been 10, 11 years ago. Me and my wife, we went to Japan and we stayed in a hotel in Tokyo, then Osaka and Kyoto, and then we went to an island called Miyajima, which is amazing. And then there was a festival just kind of north of Hiroshima that we really wanted to go to, because I read it was just this tiny little town, but it was this incredible festival that was only happened over a 2-day period, and it was people came from all over Japan to see it. I was like, oh, we'll go to that. But all the hotels were booked out, and so we had to stay in a Buddhist temple for 3 nights. And I thought, this would be wicked, man. This would be a bit like monkey magic, get a nice Buddhist vibe. I speak to the Buddhist monk about Buddhism. It was horrible. It was just horrible. You had to share showers. Oh, it's disgusting.
What, like at the same time?
Not quite at the same time, but you just think, it was horrible. You could hear people having sex. The monk was this American guy called Woody, and he was miserable.
That's not what you want from a monk.
And I go, so, Woody, how did you become a Buddhist? Just got into it and moved to Japan.
It's not what you
Okay, great, Woody, great chat with you. I actually had a row with a French guy about how to cook a jacket potato.
What did he say?
Well, my thing was you put it in the oven and you just cook it.
Yeah.
And he went, oh, no. I don't even remember what he said, because I had such disregard for his stupid Gallic ways. And I remember I was getting really angry, and my wife was going, just calm down. I was going, no, this guy's being a dick. He's telling me how to cook a jacket potato. I know how to cook a jacket potato. Arrogant.
Well, I'm guessing he was French. I'm guessing a microwave wasn't involved.
No, I mean, only recently have I started using microwaves for jacket potatoes. But that was my only experience with hosteling. Never again.
So
never again.
You didn't do the whole travel thing when you were, like, finished. Did you go to university?
I went to university. Didn't do the travel thing. I didn't go into railing. I didn't do the travel thing. My kind of big travel thing after leaving university was about a year after, and I went and worked in Pakistan for 3 months.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty good.
That was nuts.
Why? And what happened?
My dad... I kind of hadn't really spoken to my dad for a long time. You're getting all the dirt. I'd fallen out of my dad.
I do this.
And you're clever. I like it. And he worked in TV and film. He worked as a props master. So he was in charge of getting all the props for films. And in an attempt to kind of rebuild our relationship, he said, I'm going to go and work in Pakistan for 3 months. Do you want to come and work as part of my crew? And I went, yeah, sure. All right, I'll do it. All grumpy because I didn't really like him. Yeah, I'll do it, whatever. So I went to Pakistan for 3 months when I was 24. Now, that was hardship. I mean, we were staying in the Pearl Continental Hotel, so it was a luxury hotel. Okay, it was a luxury hotel.
Sounds like real hardship.
It was a luxury hotel, but it was very hot. It was very hot. You'd be on set at 7 in the morning, just sweat, just pouring off your face. You think, oh, God. We were getting bomb threats every single day. suicide. This was before we even really knew about suicide bombers. So every day the front page of the paper would say, would have, they did one day, I remember they did, I wish I'd kept this, a whole page of people had texted in saying what they thought about this film. Because it was a very controversial film. It was about Muhammad Ali Jinnah, right? Kind of a very important person to them during partition. And it was being played by Christopher Lee. So they were angry it was being played by a white guy, who does actually look like him. But also they were more upset it was being played by Dracula. And so they were furious. And so the front page of this paper was, I am a member of the Pakistan Army. If I had the chance, I would sacrifice my life and drive a lorry load of explosives into this film crew. And we're reading this and kind of laughing, because we didn't really know about suicide bombers then, right? Now we'd be like, shit. It was some experience, man. It didn't really rebuild relationship with my dad at all. In fact, it made it worse, and it was very, very tense. But we had working, doing security for us with the Pakistani police, who were totally inept and totally bent. In the sense of being corrupt. There was one scene where it was two different factions were having a fight in the street, and the extras were the police and the army, right, who hate each other politically in Pakistan. I don't know the story. They hate each other, and it was really tense. And at some point in the filming of this riot, it kicked off, someone fired a live gun, and then they just going for it, and my dad grabbed me and said, leave everything, get in the van, I'll see you back at the hotel. And that was it, and everyone just pegged it out of there, and there was a fight, you know, it was a proper fight with guns involved.
Oh my God, you're like, this is not my gap year experience.
This was terrifying. I mean, it was thrilling, but it was terrifying, you know. But I had a great, I love Pakistan. I'd like to go back, but I'm scared, if I'm honest. I met some really cool people there that I lost touch with. And I would like to get in touch with them.
That should be quite, not easy, but you know,
should
with
be easy
social
now.
Media, the internet.
I've got, the thing is, I need to, I haven't got their full names. And I've got a call sheet around somewhere that has got their names, and I should dig it out. In fact, having this chat has inspired me to go and dig out that call sheet if I can find them. But I love Pakistan.
I've never been, actually. I've been to India several times, and my family are from, my dad's family are Indian Fijians.
Right.
But I've had this really incredible experience in the last week where I've been, for 2 whole days, I've been recording with Lady Pamela Hicks, who is the daughter of Mountbatten.
Okay.
Who was the last viceroy, amongst many other things,
yeah.
The last viceroy.
Yes, yeah, a very controversial
India.
Figure, yeah,
and
of course.
He was there for partition. He oversaw partition. She's 90. And
wow.
She's her daughter
an
is India Hicks, who's a sort of socialite and designer and everything. And we've had this incredibly intense experience where I'm recording a podcast for her. She doesn't talk to the media. She doesn't want to talk. But for some reason, she's chosen me to do this podcast. So I've sat for 3 hours each day, or 3 hours of worth of recording, so a lot more time sort of sitting and chatting, talking about the experience she had when she went to India.
God.
She was quite a young girl.
I'd love to hear
and
that.
Her mum was a very interesting character. She had affairs left, right and centre all over the place, including with Nehru.
Oh, her mum, of course. Yes. Her mum was played by Mariah Aitken, Jonathan Aitken's wife in the film.
That's right.
Yeah, she was there was a lot of that going on with Nehru. Yeah, totally. That's, they were lovers, yeah.
Yes, well, although later Pamela wasn't very sure. I don't think she wouldn't protect her mum for like talking about her lovers, because she talks about lots of them, because she sounded like quite a girl, so she's kind of like great love. She spent a lot of time in refugee camps. They invited Indian people into the viceroy's house,
yeah.
And you know, literally and metaphorically to the table for the first time. So they did a lot of good. You know, they weren't just these colonials as well, although obviously something involved.
Well, they did a lot of good.
Intense.
But Pakistan got the short end of the wedge with the whole partition thing, and they kind of said, right, you got this crappy little bit up here. You got, I can't remember how long it was. It was a month, or it was 3 months, or something, to get all the Muslims up there. You got there.
Yes, crazy.
And India, you got all of this. I mean, neither came out particularly well. You know, I don't want to play poverty top trumps, but of a very thin wedge, Pakistan got the thinnest bit of it. I'd love to hear that, though. I bet that's fascinating.
Yeah, well, we're working on it at the moment. I'm going up to record another session.
Oh.
The next session we're talking about is, she was on the 1953 Commonwealth tour with the Queen as her lady-in-waiting. And she was there when the Queen was told her father had died. Do you remember? You've probably seen The Crown, but,
yeah.
You know, she was up in a treehouse in Africa somewhere and found out, and she was, Lady Pamela was there. So it's really fascinating.
Jeez.
I can't wait to edit it and get it out there.
That's proper living history. That's great. Well
living
done, you.
History.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of her stories, she stayed with the Vanderbilts in New York in the middle of the war, you know, next to the Central Park.
Oh, let me know when that's out.
I will, absolutely. Anyway, we're talking about you and not them. Where should we go next? Pakistan, where should we go after that?
Let's go luxury.
Yeah, I always like a bit of luxury.
Maldives.
Yes. Oh, amazing.
Oh, God.
It is amazing.
I did it. I've done it twice. And the last time it was my honeymoon. The first half was India, and the second half was the Maldives.
Oh, you needed that to recover from India, because India is really fascinating and interesting and lovely, but it's hard work.
It's intense.
Well, isn't it?
It's intense. I didn't really enjoy India. I didn't really enjoy it because I just focused on the poverty, you know, and it's just like. It was, you know, I don't know, white man guilt or whatever it was, but it felt uncomfortable going, hey, are we here to celebrate? And these kids are dancing around us because we're giving them a plastic pen, you know. Anyway, the Maldives, the second time we went, I book holidays myself and I'm never very good. I never know quite what I've booked. And so we got, and there's loads of different islands in the Maldives, and we got on this tiny little plane, me and my wife and a couple of other couples. The other couples are very loud. Do you know what? I think you know what I'm saying, but they're very loud. They were rambunctious. They were not the sort of people I would like to.
No,
and I was thinking, oh God, what have I done? What have I done? And the plane landed, and we got off, and we were met by this guide, and it took us to a jetty, and he said, right, we're all going to go to that boat over there. And he said, except for you two, you're on that boat over there. Oh, thank God they turned right, we turned left. And it was me and my wife, and we got on this boat, luxury boat, on our own. We were driven to an island. We were met by a butler. We had a butler! I didn't know we booked a butler! This guy called Bokhari. And he would phone up every morning, hello, Butler Bokhari, what would you like to do today? And we were embarrassed, because we go, nothing. Just want to sit in a hammock and read. And we might go for a ride on the bicycles later. Okay. The best afternoon was spent playing pool with Bokhari, because we felt we've not really done anything with him. So let's go. Let's ask him if he wants to come and play pool with us. So he played pool. But it was just, I mean, ridiculous. I mean, it was so expensive. Wonderful. We had bicycles to ride around in. Greeted by a glass of champagne. I wasn't drinking at the time, but this amazing beachside apartment with an outside shower, and it's this huge apartment, and you've got your own private bit of beach, and then you could go, you could look through the menu of what spa treatments do you want to have today.
Well, I wouldn't do for one of those.
Oh mate, and you was it one of those ones we went and had a massage side by side, and you're on the table and it's glass underneath you and you can see the sea. Oh my God,
it wasn't called the Island Hideaway, was it?
Yeah, I think it was.
I think I've been to the same resort.
I think it was.
There were a lot of mosquitoes.
There were a lot of mosquitoes.
Yeah.
They would fire off smoke pellets,
yes,
like, all the time.
I think I've
there was
the
a giant
thought.
Bat.
I don't remember a giant bat, but you cycle around the island.
There's
it's
a few,
sort of very eco one.
There's an it is. There's a few you cycle on, I think. But is yeah, this was very, very eco.
I've only been to two islands. One was amazing, and it was called the Lily Beach Resort, and it was just the best place I've ever been in my life. And I didn't know. I don't know. I've got two young children. I didn't know the meaning of needing relaxation back.
Yeah.
I was very relaxed at the time. I mean, now I'd like, you know, I'd give my left arm to go and learn a Maldives beach. You know, it's the level of relaxation you have sort of pre-kids and post-kids is a completely different thing.
Oh, it's incredible.
Relaxing, sort of going to the toilet on your own, right?
Yeah.
So we had this amazing, like, luxury resort. And then Island Hideaway, which I went to. I've mentioned the name. This is the one place that I've never spoken about on any of my travel reviews in the press. It's the one place that I didn't do a review about because although it was amazing, the mosquitoes, I felt like I was dying.
Mosquitoes were incredible. I think it was the same
and I
place.
Wanted to leave, and I can't believe I've mentioned the place because these people pay for me to go there.
Whoa, what WTF? Right, bleep them out. Tell me how I get that gig, please. I want that gig.
I could get you that gig tomorrow.
Get me that gig. I came third in I'm a Celebrity. I can't blag anything
Seriously?
These days.
Are they not throwing holidays at you?
I can't blag a thing. Get me a holiday.
I could get you a holiday. I'll
could
see
you?
Yeah, well, you've come on my podcast. I can get
mate.
You a holiday in return.
Get me a holiday.
Sure. You obviously have to write it up.
I'll write it up. Of course I'll write it up. I'll do a radio show from there.
There you go.
Yeah, there were a lot of mozzies.
I think it might be the same place. I mean, obviously a few of them have bikes and a few of them have the overwater spa. The overwater spa that I remember was sort of it had a big curved walkway.
I think so. The thing I remember about that holiday was we found out that we were having our first kids on that holiday.
Did
you? Yeah, because we were in India, and my wife said, shotgun wedding, I guess. My wife said, I think I might be pregnant, but I don't know. But I've not missed a period. I think just something feels not right. And I don't think it's the food. So we're in the hotel in India, and we said, where can we get a pregnancy tester from? And she said, all right, if you go out of the hotel, go left, take the second right, and there'll be a shop there. We took the left, we took the second right. It's some bloke's house. It was a bloke's house.
So he's got a few crystals, you know, something like stick in your ear.
Something like that. He was like a pharmacist, and we knocked on the door. And he went, yeah? He said, can we get pregnancy tested? Went, yeah, sure, I'll get you one. And we paid him, I don't remember what it was, pennies. And we got one, and it came up positive, but we both went, nah, this is from a bloke's house. That is nonsense. It might have come back negative, actually, I'm not sure. I think it came back negative. And then the next week when we went to the Maldives, and there's a doctor on the island, and we booked in, and we said, we'd like to do a pregnancy test, please. And we found out that we were pregnant. Aww, in the Maldives!
That's really lovely.
Luxury! Yeah. It was really, really special. And the people there made a fuss of us, and they did a card and brought us a cake. And, I tell you the second best thing was, because we didn't really use Bokkari. And one day he phoned us up at like midday and said, tonight, hello, Butler Bokkari speaking. He would always say, Butler Bokkari speaking. Such a nice lad. Such a nice man. Tonight, I will meet you at 8 o'clock to take you for dinner. What? I will collect you at 8 o'clock. All right, yeah, sure, fine, whatever.
I think I know what you're going to say. On the beach.
Yes, man!
That lovely little place.
He took us to the beach. Yeah. And he
I think I've had the same dinner.
Incredible! Isn't it? They took us to the beach. It's like completely dark. It's just this clear sky. And there are these sort of four candle, flaming torches. It's stuck in the ground. And a table. And we didn't know anything about it. And me and my wife went, fucking hell, this is incredible. And he served the meal. And then he just disappeared. Then he sensed that we'd finished, he'd come back. And you had that as well.
I think I did. But it's
magic,
weird, isn't it? I don't know if it's a British thing. I love that sort of thing, but I also feel, like you said, with a butler, really awkward.
Oh, so awkward. It was so awkward. It was horrendously tense. And we couldn't relax for any of it. But it was magical,
really,
man.
Magical.
It was magical.
So my last question is always about music.
Yes.
I know you're a big music fan.
Yes.
And I always think that music and travel go hand in
hand. Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to ask you to choose one song that reminds you of a special time or place of travel. What would that one song be?
Oh, that is a great one. Okay, it's a 30-second piece of music. It's Japanese. It's by a band called the Kurikorda Quartet. The Japanese name is Pythagoras Suichi, which it means Pythagoras' switch. It's just this amazing bit of music. And I'll tell you why it's so special. They're one of my favourite bands. I'd had them on my radio show when I was at LBC on the phone, which is great because they don't really speak English. When we knew we were going to Japan, I just emailed their website and said, hi, I don't know if you remember, you came on my show. Me and my wife at the time, we're going to be in Tokyo on these dates. Just wondered if you're doing any shows. Thought we'd get nothing back. A week later, we get an email back saying, really bad English, Janglish they call it. Thank you for coming to visit our Tokyo. We have put on a special concert for you. We would like you to be our special guests on Monday. La, la, la. What? And we went, and they put on a concert in a tiny club. I mean, they're kind of a cool cult band. Tiny club, 250 people there. We were the guests of honour. They gave a speech about us. They played. Afterwards, they took us out for dinner, and then they said, tomorrow we come to your hotel at 9 in the morning, and we will be your tour guides.
Amazing.
And they took us, two of them and their manager, Shinomi, who's still a friend of mine, Shinomix, they took us around Tokyo all day and paid for everything. They took us to the temples, they took us to see traditional Japanese stand-up, which is done in like samurai garb. It was incredible. And so anything by Kurikorda Quartet just makes me, Japan is the friendliest place. Tokyo in particular is the friendliest place I've ever been to.
I can't afford to play music on the podcast, but if there's any chance we can ask them, see what you can do.
I am going to email the Kurikorda Quartet, although there's only three of them now, one of them left, but they're still called the Kurikorda Quartet. I will send them an email and see if they'll let us play it, and if they don't, well then up theirs.
Thank you so much for coming on the Big Travel Podcast.
Thank you, that was fun, I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much again, Ian. It was such fun to finally meet up in person and to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with more fascinating life stories through travel.